everyone, welcome to Anatomy of an Agency with me, Katie Traxton. This podcast shares the experiences of people in the public eye who work in the business of sport and entertainment. Whether you're looking to work with talent or for your own representation, we hope to give you honest insight into how things work. The good, the bad, and everything else in between. In this episode, we are joined by Olympic middle distance runner, Tom Lancashire, and I asked him when he first knew that he could become a professional athlete.
Probably towards the, 17, 18, when I started thinking, okay, up to that point, it was a hobby and something I enjoyed doing that I wanted to get better at, but I never then really sort of thought, okay, I'll fully go down this path, even though prior to that, you like I say, you're dreaming of the Olympics and stuff like that.
I saw that you got a scholarship. You went to Florida.
Florida State, yes.
Florida State.
Very important distinction.
So you went all the way to Florida.
Yeah.
From the rainy north of England.
Yes.
Did you have to go to Florida? Like, when you were thinking, I would like to make this a career, did you think the only way is if I go to America?
No, actually. And that has made me realize something slightly different. So when I went to America, I actually had applied and got a place to study medicine back home in the UK. So, and my plan was to go and basically do a gap year, but as a scholarship in America. So the university didn't know that, but I just wanted to go somewhere, train somewhere nice for a year, do some studies that would maybe help me towards what I wanted to do at that time, which was medicine. And actually, in hindsight, thinking about it, that's when during that year, when I really improved and started getting some kind of achieving some things and getting faster and closer to that sort of senior top elite level, is when I sort of decided I'll push back the medicine a year and then another year and then I'm going to carry on with this now. So revise my previous answer, actually it was during university, I think, when my other career goals kind of went to one side and athletics became my focus. And so, going to America definitely wasn't something I felt like I had to do, but it was a very nice fit for me at that time and a great opportunity. And you mentioned the rainy north of England, and actually the sun in Florida was a big factor in my decision. Basically, I wanted to go on a year-long training camp. And so there was a few other universities I was looking at, but none that had quite the overall package that Florida State had.
Did it feel like sliding doors, like you genuinely had to choose, okay, now it's medicine and running will be a hobby, or I'm running and I'm kind of going to have to table the medicine?
A little bit, and that moment probably happened later on, though. I think in the beginning, I was very much just, it felt like I was postponing the medicine and I can always go back to it. And then I don't know when the point happened where I sort of kind of accepted to myself, maybe I'll never go to it actually, and I'll have this career in running, and whatever comes from that comes from it, and so, kind of stop thinking about beyond athletics actually, so much. My parents are both GPs, and I come from a sort of family with medical background, and I'd always sort of had that interest in it. And even now, I sort of, if there's opportunities to work in something medical related, I enjoy. And so part of the work I'm doing now is kind of a health tech company, and I'm interested in that sort of side of things. I think probably during the latter part of my university career, where, like I said, I was definitely reached a point where I was like, right, I'm knocking on the door of the senior teams here. I can go to the Olympics, I can make a career of this, is when I sort of thought, okay, it's not going to be realistic to do medicine and do this, or do anything else and do this. So that kind of point came probably the year of qualifying for the Olympics, or the year before, where I was still in university and studying, so it wasn't like athletics was my only focus, but I ran a very good 800 in 2007, I remember, and I think I was second in the USA National Collegiate Championships, and that was kind of a bit of a breakthrough to be on the sort of radar.
Quite fast,
quite fast. And then, so at that point, I think, I thought, okay, beyond college now, I'm going to look at what I can do athletics wise.
Was it the right choice, athletics over medicine?
I mean, that's impossible to answer, but I definitely have no regrets about the choices I've made. You know, I mean, everything that's kind of come since then is a result of those decisions I made and the people I know and the people I've met and the places I've been and all this sort of stuff. I'm sure I would have had amazing experiences if I'd gone to a different university or chosen a different path, but I'm very happy and grateful for all the experiences I've had as a direct result of pursuing athletics at that time.
So at the time you got chosen to go to Beijing, to the Olympics, did you really understand everything that was happening? Was it very much like you knew, okay, if I succeed in this tournament, then I'll get selected to go here, I'll go to Beijing, this is what will happen next? Or were you just rolling with it because you were running fast?
A little bit of both. Obviously, you're very clear on what you have to do to qualify for the Olympics, and you're very clear on the times you have to run and who you have to beat, and you know, that stuff is thought through, and you plan the season as races come along, and you know, target where you're going to go for the time and so on. In terms of my athletics career, I was still quite young and naive at that point, and of course you get selected and you start thinking about, okay, what if I win a medal? This is amazing. Oh, my contract has this in it, and if I become Olympic champion, all this thing, and you know, not very realistic thinking at that stage. It's great to sort of aim high, but you know, it's for me, qualifying was a great achievement in itself, and so I don't think, certainly not financially, really, I wasn't thinking of anything that might come from it, but you just. I'm very much a dreamer and very much an optimist, and you think about, oh, what if I do this, it'd be so cool, and so on. So I was thinking it in those terms, really, not like, oh, then I'll be set for life and I'll have this career, and it was more just trying to absorb the fact that I'm going to be an Olympian and just do my best, really.
Did you have anyone on the sporting or commercial side approach you and say, right, I'm going to help you with this, I'm going to take the bull by the horns, I want to be your agent, this is how we're going to optimize this for you off the track?
Off the track, not really, no. So in the year leading up to the Beijing Olympics, I'd started, I've been in touch with Ricky Sims at Pace Sports Management, and as a sort of you know, race agent. And at that time, I mean, probably a commercial agent or the commercial side of things kind of just went hand in hand with that. So they, you know, they would talk about contracts and all this sort of stuff, but all related to running specific stuff. And there was, you know, I think they had a sort of commercial part of it, but certainly wasn't something that was I was super aware of. And probably, you know, I'm realistic in that I wasn't the most famous person on their books at that time. You had people like Mo Farah and Usain Bolt and Christina Ruhugu, you know, these people that I was like in awe of, and they're a level away from me, so, or at least a level away from me. So I wasn't really thinking about that stuff, and it certainly wasn't being, you know, presented to me, I guess. And also, looking back now, I appreciate as well, it was a very different time in terms of social media and how you almost have a responsibility as an athlete now to project yourself out there much more. And naturally, I'm not too like that anyway, but I probably would have done more or had a better appreciation of that kind of self-promotion stuff now than I did back then. Back then, I was very focused on, okay, I'm going to the Olympics, this is my number one focus. I want to focus on the running, focus on how well I can do. I'm not bothered about a lot of this other stuff. Whereas now, I guess I understand more that stuff's important, and you know, and it's more important now to the brands and the contracts you might get that you're good at that stuff and you're good at promoting yourself.
Would having more commercial support and therefore potentially more funding have actually helped your running, or would it have been a distraction?
I don't know if it would have. I think I was always quite sensible, quite good at balancing my life in general. So I was always very conscious of athletics not being my entire life and the how I entirely define myself. So I was always careful to have other things going on. And so I think with any commercial stuff, I probably would have had that same approach that, okay, this is because of how well I'm running. So that's the most important thing and I need to make sure it fits with that. So I think I would have been quite aware of that. In terms of helping, I think probably two sides to it. I think I was in quite a fortunate position where I had had a decent contract enough to sort of not have to do anything else. But also I think there's a sort of self-perpetuating thing with that kind of stuff where you project yourself or you're treated as a top athlete and then you believe in that yourself more and then that makes your performances follow. So I think, you know, I think you see with a lot of athletes when if they win a major medal on a big stage that then suddenly more come and they sort of have this belief and almost kind of it's created this thing that I'm a medalist and I'm going to win another medal and another medal. And so I think having, you know, it's probably not a coincidence that a lot of the top athletes you see, Josh Kerr and Jakob Ingebrigtsen in the 1500, they believe in themselves so much, and part of that comes from externally people saying you're amazing, you're going to win, and so on, and it creates a better performance for yourself, I think. So it's hard to say whether it would have helped or not, but I'd like to think I wouldn't have let it be too much of a distraction.
Yeah, it's fascinating how the psychological and the physical go hand in hand. Yeah. When you went to Beijing, how old were you? And what was your mindset? How confident were you feeling? And what was your support network like?
So I was 23. It was my first major senior competition. So I'd done, I think I'd done a lot of age group stuff with GB and sort of silver medal in under 20s as in the European Championships, and I think sixth in the World Junior Championships and stuff like that. So I'd had some experience of international events and of course the stuff in America.
I like the fact you just were like, oh, I think I was sixth in the world.
Yeah,
it's no real biggie.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, sixth or something, yeah. I think, like I say, I probably was, because it was my first, it was probably sort of a bit naive and overly optimistic maybe about, you sort of think about the final and have little daydreams about being on the podium and stuff. And again, realistically, in hindsight, I'm honest enough to say, like, okay, that was never on the table. I was a long way off that at that time. I felt well prepared. I didn't have any sort of real, at that time, any sort of real sports psychology support. You have your kind of nutrition and physio support through the team. And the coach I was with at the time, Norman Poole, was tons of experience with coaching Olympians and middle distance. And my training partner, Michael Rimmer, was also at the same games who Norman coached also. So we kind of had that little group set up there. I think I felt pretty well supported and well prepared. Again, I feel like, as with anything, you probably compare that Olympics to 20 years prior, and the amount of support they had then was probably way different. And maybe not in terms of the number of people, but maybe the science behind things and stuff. And you compare it to now, with everything that goes on in recovery technology and stuff, that's again gone up another level. So, yeah, for the time, you probably I felt well supported and felt ready going into it. Think about that race and a lot of races I've done when I've in the later part of my career when I worked with a sports psychologist. I think there's definitely stuff I could have done differently and done better to execute my race better. Which in hindsight is frustrating, but yeah, it's all learning.
But that's also life, right?
That's the way all of us become better.
So what happened after Beijing between then and London?
Yeah.
Because to my mind, not knowing that much about middle distance running and hearing your story, that Beijing should have been the start.
Yeah.
And then you're building towards London, but you didn't take part in London.
No. So I had, that period of Beijing up until the year before London, 2011. Well, Beijing 2009-2010 especially were like my prime years. And looking back, like at the time you didn't realize it, and no one ever does realize when they've run their last their PB for the last time. But those next 2 years, and again, probably from the mental side of things, buoyed by the fact that I'm an Olympian now, I won the British Champions last year, I'm the man kind of thing, and you keep progressing. And those 4 years really, 2007, 8, 9 and 10, I really progressed nicely, and 2010 ran what is still my PB, and was, along with Andy Badley, the two of us were the kind of top two guys in British middle distance. And in 2010 we're both in the finals of the European Championships and the Commonwealth Games. Again, it was all progressing quite nicely towards London. As a bit of an example of how commercial stuff can go wrong, I had a problem then off the back of the 2010 season, which was my best season. Got sponsorship from a sort of nutrition supplement company that, a very long story short, sort of supplements weren't too great for me, and I became quite ill for a period of months and missed the whole of the 2011 season with basically sort of chronic fatigue type thing.
Oh, no.
And then it was sort of the winter of 2011 when I finally got back running, and at that point you're on a race against time to get fit for London. So pushing probably a bit too hard and trying to make up for lost time and already behind schedule, that's when I started to get some Achilles problems. And very long story short, it ran the Olympic trials in 2012 with one good leg and one bad one, and
probably still better than mine when they're both working.
No comment. But so missed out on that, and that's just, again, I try not to have regrets about it, but that's one of the things that happens. And I remember, I think in my post-race interview in Beijing, I'd said, come 2012, I'm going to be way better, I'm going to be totally different, I'm going to be ready for it, and I'll be in my prime. And obviously at that time you don't know what's around the corner, and it was a total freak set of circumstances that kind of meant I missed London. And then in 2016 as well, just had a few injury problems, but just missed out on the qualifying time by a fraction of a second. So I didn't know at the time that Beijing would be my only Olympics, but at the time I was thinking, I've got London, Rio, maybe another Olympics after that as well. And you kind of think so it's just, it's just how it worked out.
Oh my goodness, I'm still training for like 8 years, getting on for a decade after Beijing, but then having these challenges out completely out of your hands is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, most athletes will say, well, to a degree it's out of your hands. You're constantly on this borderline of pushing your body, and every so often you find that limit, and sometimes you don't, and you think you've done something wrong because you've not reached the limit. So it's a constant battle, and a massive part of being a successful athlete is that talent of pushing yourself the right amount and luck sometimes of not going over it. So
throughout that period, right up till after Rio, was being an athlete still your only job?
Around 2015, I think I started doing some part-time work with a friend of mine, Andrew Steele, who'd been involved with it's a company called DNA Fit, which did genetics testing, but sort of health and fitness related genetic testing.
All right, passions are aligning.
Yes, yeah. So because of, I had no training in genetics at all, but I had a sort of sports science and kind of physiological background, and the fact that I was a professional athlete, I started working for them as a consultant with clients that had their tests done and talking through what the results mean on a very, very part-time basis. So, a few hours a week, speaking to people on Skype calls, Zoom calls, whatever, and talking through their results. And that was kind of really became my main source of income, actually, as contracts and stuff dried up, because I wasn't really performing. So that definitely kept me going through that period. I kind of gradually shifted over to doing more of it. And towards the end of my career, I was basically working full time with them and doing athletics.
So when did you retire and what was the plan? Have you retired?
I don't know if I've actually retired. Yeah, I think in my mind, I'm still, you know, I like to go around and tell me I'm a professional athlete. But no, I mean, my plan really was always to go to 2020. Probably going to try and change events to, I toyed with the steeplechase, also 5K. So 2020 was really going to be my last shot of trying to make an Olympics and be you know, competitive, certainly on a national level. And frustratingly, that winter of, I'd started with a new coach, Steve Cram, a couple of years before, and had some good success and fifth in the European indoors, I think, in 2018, and run fairly well and was quite, you know, feeling quite good towards, and because I'd actually had these injury problems, I felt like I didn't have a lot of mileage on the clock, if that makes sense. Like I felt fresh still as
you're worn out.
I didn't feel like my years as such. And through that, I mean, I did invest a lot of time and money as well during that winter of 2019, 2020. Spent 3 or 4 months in South Africa, warm weather training, and really gave it my all to give myself the best shot. And that, I remember coming back sort of March, April from South Africa that year, and felt like, you know, I was in the best shape I'd been for a long time and was ready to kind of move into the track season. And then obviously the COVID stuff really took off and races just kept getting pushed back, and eventually the Olympics, of course, got moved. And that was a real, psychologically, that was a real tough blow, because I'd put a lot of work in, and really, after having a lot of injury problems and setbacks, finally everything coming together to then have the opportunity to take away was really disappointing. So rather than kind of officially retire then, it's maybe what I should have done, I thought, okay, I'll try another season and try another year. But by that time I was working more full time. That genetics company became a COVID testing company. I was doing a lot of work with the Premier League, and it was quite intense work. So that, tied with the fact that running started to feel like a real chore, and I was doing it not because I wanted to, but just because I felt I should, and get up in the morning and beat myself up if I didn't go for my morning run, and trying to tell yourself, oh, it's only a 4 or 5 mile morning run, you can get away with it. But when you start doing races and realizing actually all those handful of morning runs probably add up to something quite significant, I was just realized that kind of that fire had gone a little bit. And so yeah, I did race a bit in the 2021 season, but pretty early on I realized I wasn't anywhere near where I would need to be. I think towards the end of that season, I just stopped and probably didn't run a step for about nine months or so after, just because I just didn't want to. And now I'm kind of got quite a good relationship with running now. I run when I feel like it. If I don't feel like it, I don't beat myself up. I still set myself little targets, like did my first marathon earlier in the year, and that was a nice thing. That's just, I've got no comparison, nothing to compare to. And I also, on the sort of retirement thing, I think it's probably me being quite self-deprecating, but I didn't feel like I was worthy of making a retirement announcement. Like, who cares? Like, you know, I'll just stop if I want to stop. People don't need to know. And so,
Or you could just be like Nyad and come back at 60.
Right. Well, yes. Maybe I'll need to keep setting myself new targets, sort of maybe age-based targets rather than kind of ultimate targets. But yeah, so that's where I am now. Like, I'm doing another marathon later in the year, which I'm going to sort of really give a good go and try and see what I can do. If I stay healthy, I'd like to next summer maybe see what I can do I'll be turning 40. It'd be great to see what I can do as a 40-year-old and maybe run a good 1500 mile or something. I don't know. But I do now, like, I enjoy going training with my old group, with Norman Poole and his guys, and I can kind of feel like I can help them a little bit with parts of sessions and parts of advice and stuff. I've got a few decent lads there who, you know, might go on to compete internationally and stuff. So I quite like that, and I'm quite happy with doing that and accepting that I'm not going to run as fast as you know, they're doing the same sessions I was doing, and it's easy to sort of think, oh God, I used to do the session and I used to run this time and this and then miles off that. And those thoughts creep into your head, but I don't really let it affect me too much now. So.
And aside from the work with the genetics company, which feels like it kind of fortuitously appeared at just the right moment.
Yeah.
Has anyone helped you with transition? Have you had an agent? Have you had anybody else who's gone, okay, this is how you tackle the world outside of being a professional athlete?
Not really. I'm not necessarily saying that as there wasn't the support there. I think, you know, thinking back through the English Institute of Sport, where I used to get support when I was on funding, and they had kind of lifestyle and career advisors that you could access. So that sort of stuff. But at that stage, like I say, I was probably 23, 24, and all that post-athletic stuff feels like a million miles away, and I wasn't massively motivated to kind of look too much into it. Because at that stage, I'm like, right, well, I've got my contract, I'm going to be going to the next two Olympics at least, I'm set, kind of thing, which again is naive. And fortunately as well, I was, like I say, I was in a position where I didn't have to depend on tons of commercial sponsorships to survive financially, which I know isn't the case for a lot of people. So maybe that would have pushed me to pursue things, other ways of making money, aside from, you know, running contracts and prize money and stuff. So yeah, I would say not really did I have much access to, but also I didn't really pursue much in terms of that support that I could have had. And it always, yeah, probably naively, I always think like, oh, I'll be all right. I'll, you know, got a degree, I'm smart, I can do, you know, I can succeed at things if I put my mind to it, so I'll be okay, kind of thing, which is probably not good advice that I would give to my kids or anyone that I'm trying to sort of advise. But I think that was very much my mindset during that kind of middle part of my running career.
So to finish, what are you doing now? And is there any advice you wish you'd been given sooner?
So yeah, now I'm sort of along the same lines as the genetic stuff. So I'm working with Andrew Steele again in a new sort of health tech company that he started. I'm also working for a running coaching app called Cooper, which is a sort of a digital coach that helps sort of provide access to people who maybe don't want to be intimidated by running clubs or don't want to pay for a private coach. So I help build that app that supports people on their own sort of running journeys. And I'm here in Paris working with FIFA. So through COVID and the testing we were doing for Premier League football teams, that opened a few doors into the world of football. So now working operations here with FIFA as a freelancer on various events. So I've been able to get to a few different competitions with them, and been out to the World Cup and the Women's World Cup last year, and here at the Olympics. So it definitely, like, fairly fortuitously, some good opportunities have opened up. But yeah, I think the advice I would give is probably, if there are things, even if it's, you know, I'm definitely someone that's never that sure of themselves, or never, you know, I still don't know what I want to be doing in 10 years time or long term. And certainly as an athlete, you're in this bubble where everything outside it kind of doesn't matter. But there's anything that you think might be of interest to you and might be something that you want to go down, take the time to just explore it. And it doesn't mean you're committed to doing it then, but if it's as an athlete, one thing you're not short of is time. So you've got a lot of spare time where you're not training. You can use that time to go and kind of investigate whatever it is you want to do, and whether it's kind of TV stuff that a lot of sports people go into and start building their portfolio, or just kind of looking at opportunities for part-time things that you can do that won't take away from your sport. That's all great experience, because the one thing I think that athletes have when they come to them, they create and look at stuff, they've got, you know, people, they make great employees, they've got great work ethics, and they, you know, they put their best into everything they do, but they've got this kind of blank slate of experience because they've lived in this bubble. So if there is stuff that you can do that just says, well, I did a bit of work here as a part-time whatever during that season, that's a great thing to be able to say that you can do this stuff and you've got some, you know how the real world works, because sports isn't the real world. It's very different. So getting outside the bubble a little bit from time to time is no bad thing.
And those transferable skills are definitely there, but they're not always recognised by people in the industry. Like, athletes recognise them.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people love to see CVs that have the same kind of keywords that they've recognised from other roles, and they don't see those transferable skills in athletes. So I think fantastic advice.
Yeah, I think you can, yeah, it's really important to know that those skills are valuable. It's, you know, it kind of, because you're surrounded by other athletes who also work hard, and also you think everyone's like that, and they're not. You know, you have something really unique in that mindset. It is a balance. You can't go into everything in life of like 150% all the time, and you have to be the best at everything. But there's definitely a lot there that athletes have that is massively valuable to loads of organisations. So, it's definitely a powerful thing.
It's that determination that means that I, for one, can't wait to see what Tom does next. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Anatomy of an Agency, and I hope you listen to many more. In the meantime, it would be great if you could let us know what you think at Good Vibes Only Talent on social media. And other than that, from me, it's goodbye for now.